So a couple of years ago, at a similar conference, I had the opportunity to introduce Vic Strecker as a speaker. And before I had the opportunity to introduce Vic, I asked if he wanted to sit down and get together for a little bit so I could get to know Vic as a person and be able to introduce him, I felt like, a little bit more articulately. And Vic and I started chatting that time. It was in Colorado, and ever since then, we become good friends, and we started talking about these concepts and what he was working on, and he had just published his first book on purpose, and really felt like we had similar purposes together. One of the most amazing individuals that I've ever met, but we started talking about this model that he put together called SPACE: sleep, presence, activity, creativity, and eating. And I thought it was such a beautiful way to think about how to create energy and willpower. So over the last couple of years, we've become good friends. We've been talking about how do we begin to change things. You know, what is our purpose as a field, as an individual? And so, I'd like to bring Vic back up to the stage. Vic is, founder of Health Media, founder of Juul. He's written his new book, and it's called Living on Purpose, and it'll be available May 10th. He is professor and director for innovation at the University of Michigan, but more importantly, he is a dear friend and an incredible person. So, Vic.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah, wow. You need that?
No, good. Thank you so much. Wow. Before I move forward, I just want to so deeply thank my friend Ryan. 2 years ago, we had some amazing conversations about this. And from that, I've seen Ryan take Welcoa and turn it into, really transform it into one of the most modern, I think the most modern organizations to promote wellness in the country. In this last year, I've given over 90 talks now related to wellness, well-being, purpose, and things like that. And this is the number one conference for me. It's the one that I was most nervous coming up to, getting ready for. It's the one I really spent a lot of time thinking about, and I'm just so proud to be a part of this. Thank you so much, Ryan. And thank you for really recreating and redefining health with us, with wellness. So, thank you. I want to first start out with my conflicts of interest. I have three major ones. One is Juul Health, and I will be talking a little bit about Juul Health and this new app that we have that helps people align with their purpose and develop more space. I have a conflict because I hope all of you go out and buy my book. And then I have a conflict because I'm a professor at the University of Michigan, and I'm always conflicted because I want to talk about old, dead Greek philosophers. So this morning, I woke up at 6 o'clock. I got 7.5 hours of sleep. I meditated then for 20 minutes. I wanted to work out and didn't have time because I was still trying to tweak these slides, so I just kept working on that. But as I was tweaking them, I realized that I was getting kind of creative. Even though it was 6:30 in the morning, I was kind of grooving and enjoying that, and added these slides at the last minute. And then I decided to eat Raisin Bran this morning. Not bad. So I covered these five areas in various ways: sleep, presence, activity, not yet, I'm going to have to work out later, creativity, and eating well, all five of those, what I like to call space. And the reason I developed this was not for anybody else but myself 2 years ago. I felt that I needed some simple moniker and some simple core of positive behaviors that I was going to be very focused on. And from those positive behaviors, I thought I could change a lot of my negative behaviors. And I thought that I could kind of manage myself more. Very importantly, and most importantly, I felt I could be aligned with my core purpose in my life, the reason why I'm on this planet, period. And this is my purpose. So I'll just read it to you. My purpose is to enjoy love and beauty, to be an engaged father, husband, and grandfather, to teach every one of my students as if he or she were my own daughter, to study the impact of purpose on well-being, to be an engaged leader, and then to help over 1 billion people find greater purpose in their own lives. Now, that's the reason that I get up in the morning. It's the reason why I do work out, why I do meditate, why I try to sleep well, why I try to be creative, why I try to eat well, to have more energy and willpower in order to align with my purpose every single day. And That's redefining. It's not just revolutionizing, but it's redefining what people typically think about health. It even redefines, I think, the WHO, the World Health Organization, definition of this. Because I really view health as kind of being in a boat, where your body is the boat. And if your body is a boat, you need to have a lot of wind in your sails. You need energy, right? Now, we all know, by the way, though, we all know a lot of people who have a lot of energy, but no harbor, no direction, right? And no rudder, no self-control. We call these people, I think the scientific term is annoying. These people are, I've got a lot, let's do this, you know, but they have no direction, and it drives me crazy. Of course, what you really want is to have a rudder. You want self-control. You want to be able to steer your boat. Also, by the way, you need a strong boat because this lake or ocean or whatever metaphor you want to use, this water can be choppy. It can be filled with stress, right? So I think this is really important. But Seneca, 2,000 years ago, Seneca was a Roman Stoic philosopher. He was a slave for a long time. He wasn't just an elite person. He was a slave for a long time, and he ended up just writing amazing things, almost letters, some of the most modern pieces. If you ever want to read a very, very modern philosopher, read Seneca. But he once said, it doesn't matter how much wind is in your sails if you don't have a harbor. You have to have this harbor. You have to have this direction in your life. Does that make sense? Without that direction, really, what purpose is there? I mean, you know, what need do we have to be around? We're only here, and Seneca even talked about the super brief period of time we're all on this planet. And it really is. So why not make the most of it that we can? I see our society gradually dying. We're more interested in what the Kardashians are going to do than what our neighbors are doing. I think that's sad. We're more interested in the latest Miley Cyrus twerking video. Who cares, really? I mean, deeply, who cares? Well, unfortunately, a lot of people care. And I think it's sad that we don't care about our fellow human beings or many of the things that we can build a really meaningful, deeper purpose of. That's why I'm interested in this. And I came up with these areas after literally 5 years of research, studying what does give you more energy and willpower, what gives you wind in your sails, what gives you a better rudder. And it turns out that these five things, sleep, presence, activity, creativity, and purpose, have all been shown in many studies to give you all, to give you more energy and to give you more willpower. So I wake up in the morning, I meditate, I start working on my, you know, this talk a little bit more, and I open my iPhone, and it's 6:44 by then, and, oh yeah, sweet, my granddaughter, and open my iPhone, and I open this app that we've been building called Jewel, and it asks me, well, how did it go yesterday? Well, I traveled, it was kind of a rough travel day, there's a whole bunch of stuff I was trying to get ready for, so yeah, it was tough. It was tough going, you know, not super tough going, but it was tough going. And then, how energetic were you? Oh, I was definitely energized yesterday. It was so nice, great meeting and seeing Ryan again and all you know, all the people around here. How much willpower? Yeah, not bad, not too bad. How much sleep did you get? I got a lot of sleep. I slept very well. How present or mindful? Yeah, I meditated. How active have you been? Pretty active. How creative. Yeah, I hope so. You're seeing them now, so I hope so. And then how well did you eat? Not too badly, actually. I had the tilefish last night, so not too bad. And then it asks me every morning, well, how aligned are you with your purpose? How aligned were you yesterday? How aligned were you with this personal purpose to enjoy love and beauty? Not that aligned. Because I was working really hard, I was in the hotel, I just, you know, it's kind of indoors all the time. I didn't enjoy love and beauty, okay? How aligned were you with your family? Well, actually, I had a nice call with my wife, and I was really engaged, and I saw this awesome little video of my daughter, my granddaughter, I mean. And then, work purpose, oh yeah, super aligned. And your community purpose, to help 1 billion people develop purpose, very aligned with that, too. So this is what my alignment with my purpose look like. Because Aristotle, by the way, said, it's not just about having purpose and then you can go across the street to Disney World. Great, we have a purpose, super. It's more about being aligned every single day. Having a purpose is a dynamic activity. And that's why it requires space to give you more energy and willpower in order to be aligned with this purpose. Now, as soon as I put this information into my phone, the Juul app then opened this up and said, well, here's how you look. And it kind of animates this and puts it all together and says, well, you have a lot of wind in your sails. That's great. You have a harbor. You're pretty aligned with your purpose. You can see your harbor in sight, but you've had a rough day. You know, you had a rough day. But even in the midst of all that rough day, you were doing pretty well. And then I can say, well, what is, like, making me tick? What are the things that are causing this energy, greater energy and willpower? And this app takes a look at all of those things. And it says, wow, you know, your creativity, your eating, those are really key factors. The day of the month is important. How it's going is important. So all of these are like really important pieces. But in particular, today, your eating and your creativity are very important. Well, that's cool to know. But you know what? In addition, we know that the environment influences your space. Your environment influences your energy and willpower. In other words, the day of the week, it turns out to be very important. The University of Michigan, where we've been testing Juul a lot, it turns out that Thursdays, pretty low energy days. On Thursday, you really don't want to issue some new initiative. It's not a great idea because it's very low. But you might want like a walking program or something, or a meditation program on Thursday to kick that up because it's very low. The day of the month, at the end of the month, it turns out why would the end of the month reduce energy and willpower? Guess, probably because you're paying bills. The phases of the moon, can you believe it? We have found that the phases of the moon predict your energy and willpower. Who believes that? Is that wild? Now, it turns out for over 50 years, we've known that the phases of the moon predict crime. My dad is a criminologist, and he told me, I remember when I was 12 years old, he said, Vic, Little Vic, because his name is Vic, Little Vic, during a full moon, you have more crime. I said, Dad, I'm 12. I said, Dad, that's so duh. It's because there's a full moon and it's brighter out and you can see who you're robbing. And he goes, no, during cloudy days too, Little Vic, you punk. So it does seem to be true. The phases of the moon are important. The job situation in your location, wherever you are, gas prices in your location, the news events, even sports events. You know, if your NFL football team loses and you're in that community, this is true. The next day, on Monday, that community eats 16% more saturated fat. It's true. If they win, that community, on average, eats 9% less saturated fat. That's amazing, isn't it? So all those things have a factor. We know that the temperature certainly does. We know whether it's raining or the humidity, cloud cover, how much sun that you're getting. Of course, we know that our social environment has a huge influence on energy and willpower. So all of these are important. So understanding what makes me tick, I can drill down into this app and say, well, tell me how being an idea factory, being creative helps me. Well, it really influences your willpower, Vic. And then when it's down, then I'm kind of, my willpower is really affected by this, by my creativity. How about my eating? Oh my God, when I'm eating well, it's amazing. And when it's down, when I'm eating badly, my willpower goes down a lot. So I may say, wow, I want a tip. And I go and get an eating tip. I say, wow, I like that. So I click on the heart. And then I say, I'll try it. And then this app follows you for 5 days to see whether you're doing better or not, and then weights it more highly or low in this library of many, many tips. Because I frankly don't like to go to classes to learn how to eat better, or to learn how to meditate, or to learn how to do anything. I like tips. I like to ask somebody who's done well, hey, what did you do? Well, I did this. Really, I'll try that, because I think you're kind of like me, right? Do we really all want to go to classes? I don't know. We may want to learn techniques. We may want strategies. But we don't necessarily all want to sit in a long class when all we're doing is really trying to pick up a lot of tips. So in other words, all of these things have a pretty big influence on people's lives at a population level. But for me this morning, these things had a big influence on my energy and willpower and my ability to align. Now, in Buddhism, probably the primary theme in Buddhism is focus. And that's all we're trying to do here. We're trying to help you focus on the things that you need the most and remove the extraneous things. So let's look at recent history. I just turned 60 this year. And so I am old enough to go back into literally the 60s and talk a little bit about what's happened since the 60s in terms of wellness and prevention. And here are some of the models. I'm a professor, so I'm used to, you know, talking about all these dry, dusty, boring models. So this is the health belief model developed by Marshall Becker, my mentor, and Erwin Rosenstock, and a couple of other people. But the thrust of the health belief model, which is developed in the early 60s, and still used today, by the way, is threat. The central core box in the middle of it is threat. And so from that, many, 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 many high fear messages have evolved with the justification, oh, look, if you increase perceived threat, then you end up with a greater likelihood that people are going to change their lives, right? And deal with barriers, all the problems that you have. Solve the barriers, deal with threat, and that'll work really well. Well, one thing we found is as people become more threatened, very often if they have diabetes, if they smoke, many things, they end up with poorer behaviors. That's a weird thing. Why is that? Well, Ben Franklin knew the answer. He said, when the stakes are higher, you're a worse gambler. When the stakes are higher, you get nervous. And then you can't concentrate. You can't, you know, many of our lifestyle behaviors, whether, you know, from managing our weight to quitting smoking to dealing with drugs or many, many things, even physical activity, these are strategic behaviors that require a lot of strategic, complex thinking. A lot of executive functioning. And what happens when you scare a person is that the amygdala, this little almond-shaped reptilian part of their brain, goes boop. And when that happens, the front part, where the prefrontal cortex, which deals with executive functioning, just falls flat, doesn't get oxygenated blood flow. So when we scare the pee out of people, we think we've done our jobs. We do, but we haven't. So then there are other models. The theory of reasoned action in the 1970s. That's a great model. It focused on attitudes and social norms. We can move forward. SCT, social cognitive theory. We're focusing on self-efficacy. I wrote a lot about self-efficacy. Then we moved to stages of change, the trans-theoretical model. Are you a pre-contemplator? Are you a contemplator? Are you a preparer? Are you in action? Are you in maintenance? And that was a neat model because it kind of focused on a whole population and where were you in that? And then this evolved, all of these evolved into things that started explaining more variance in human behavior and were actually more increasingly useful. And this model has been amazingly useful, self-determination theory. And this is really what the underpinning theoretical conceptualization of motivational interviewing came from. This is where MI came from. So motivational interviewing is really focused on your core values. It's basically saying, hey, look, your behavior is here and your core values are here. Don't you want to kind of put those together? And it creates cognitive dissonance. There are many other elements of motivational interviewing, but that's explained much more variance and been a much more powerful model. But where do we go from here? Let's go all the way back to the 1960s and 70s. This fitting into a Folgers coffee can is an accelerometer from 1970. It was used in ICBM missiles. It was the first triaxial accelerometer, and it cost $500,000. This is also a triaxial accelerometer, and it costs 25 cents, and you can see the size of it and the weight of it compared to a quarter. Not bad. Each one costs 25 cents. This is a telephone. You remember those? I do. Because I'm 60, and this is a telephone. This is a means of communication in the 1960s. This is also a means of communication. Isn't that cool? I think it's amazing. This is a health risk assessment. These were originally developed by a guy named Lewis Robbins at the Centers for Disease Control in the late 1970s. So this is called the Healthier People HRA, which is designed at the Carter Center, a part of the Centers for Disease Control. And I just recently gave a keynote address at the Carter Center about the future of HRAs. And I said, well, here's the issue. These HRAs used in the 1970s and 80s fairly crude regression-type general least squares models to predict disease and death. That's what they were designed for. And they used Framingham and some other big human population laboratories to predict disease and death. They were given, administered typically, and have been, every year. And so here's where we've evolved. We've taken the health risk assessment and put it online. We still have the same unbelievably crude predictive models. We still assess once a year. Here's what it looks like. It says, wow, your risk of lung cancer, can you understand any of this? Oh, you should quit smoking. Oh, God, thank you. I never knew that. Wow, you'll gain 2.52 years. Really? 2.52 years? You mean I can smoke my whole life and I just lose 2.52 years? When am I dying? If I die, let's see, I die at 80 typically, so I get to die at 78. No one will care about me then anyway, and I get to smoke? Are you kidding? That is a great deal. So these kind of tell you how stupid you are, right? I'm sorry. It is time for these to go. It is simply time for these to go. It is old school. And I know some people still really believe in these. That's fine. We should still be assessing, because assessing is really important. But take a look at where these came from. These came from models that would say, well, about half of your risk is half of your disease and death, your risk is related to your lifestyle. So if you look at diet and you look at, you know, that causes being overweight and that causes all sorts of other problems, heart disease or cancer or stroke, and of course it does. In other words, what it's kind of saying is if you have these lousy health behaviors, you're going to end up with these lousy conditions and these lousy diseases, and then you're going to die. And you know, Mark Twain once said, I actually don't care about dying. I care a lot about not living, though. And that's a little more interesting to me. So I did tell you I was a professor, and I have to talk about ancient dead Greek philosophers. I'm sorry. Socrates said this, the unexamined life is not worth living. That is a super modern thing to say. And that's why we still are kind of attached to health risk assessments. By the way, I'm at the University of Michigan. They pay me $100 to take a health risk assessment. What product can you think of that you have to pay somebody to take? Seriously. Like if I had a glass of water up here and I said, I'll pay you $100 to drink this water. You'd go, well, okay, I will. But what's wrong with the water? There has to be something wrong with this. Why would you have to pay me for this? Well, it's good for you. Oh, fine. Okay, now if you had the water, you know, here's a glass of tea. Here's a bottle of tea. What will you pay me for it? You start getting into this negative vortex, I think, where everybody has to be paid for something. And then we call that behavioral economics, which it really isn't. Because behavioral economists actually understand that as you keep paying people, that provides an extrinsic reinforcer, and the more you pay people, the less behavior you actually achieve. So we like to call it behavioral economics, it's not. We like to say it works, it does not. And really, we blame the end user then. We say, well, they're stupid. You know, they're not motivated. Really? Who's stupid? I'm a big fan of these things, the quantified self. At the same, and this is exactly, you know, this is what Socrates was saying. He was saying the unexamined life is not worth living. So we should be, you know, really into this. The quantified self person is also saying the unexamined life is not worth living. But I'm worried about the quantified self, and I'm really concerned that it's become the quantified selfish. I think we're so focused on us. We want to monitor everything about us, right? We want our Google glasses. We want this special underwear that monitors our hydration and everything else. You know, really, honestly, and they're building that too, believe it or not. And so they're monitoring everything. That's fine. So I know all about moi, right? I'm not sure. Aristotle, who is essentially the philosophic grandson of Socrates, said this. And I'm paraphrasing, but he said essentially that a life without purpose isn't worth examining. So think about the yin-yang of these two things. Socrates says an unexamined life is not worth living, but Aristotle's going, yeah, but a purposeless life isn't even worth examining in the first place. So what if you could put those two together? What if you could have a quantified self, but at the same time thinking about how to be less selfish, how to be otherish, as my colleague Adam Grant at Penn says. So how could we take this model, which is really the traditional model we've been using in public health, in prevention, and in wellness for decades, and how could we flip it and say, let's focus more on purpose? And let's think about purpose and how we can align with it through having more energy and willpower. And how could we develop more energy and willpower? Through space, through sleep, presence, activity, creativity, and eating. All of these lines in this represent actual studies. And I won't bore you with the zillions of studies related to this, but one neat thing is that if I want to help a person manage their stress, I'll work on their presence. By the way, presence, by presence, I'm referring to mindfulness, which can refer to yoga. It can refer to meditation. By the way, there are over 200 kinds of meditation. There's so many different ways to meditate. But there are a lot of different ways of becoming present. So I would help a person become more present if I want to help them manage their stress. I would help them sleep better. I would help them become more creative. I would help them eat better. All of these things, all of these are relevant to managing your stress. If I want to help a person quit smoking, what would I do? I want to enhance their willpower, right? I'd want them to become physically active. I'd want them to eat better. I'd want them to sleep well. All of those things. I'd want them to be more creative because then they could come up with creative solutions to manage nicotine dependency. All of those are important. So, in other words, all of these negative behaviors, if I could deal with those with this core set of behaviors called space, which are all positive behaviors, then I could really make a difference. Now, of course, you may want a smoking cessation program. That's fine. But that program would start with these core behaviors. Is that making sense? So why not think a little more about that? Now, on the other hand, we also know that things like purpose then cause more energy. When I'm purposeful, I just get more energy in my life. I'm more vital. I feel more alive. I also have more willpower and focus. I have focus in this Buddhist sense because I'm removing all the extraneous crap. I'm not watching the Kardashian sisters tonight. I'm actually going to start working on this talk. So that's the sort of thing I do. We also know, though, that even with these things, that we have these environmental factors, as I said before, the weather, the time, the geography, where we live, the economy, news, sports events, all are very important. So that's why we've built this new app called Juul. And this app is really designed to do all of these things we've been talking about. Discover your values, align with purpose, find your purpose. And this is the first time we've actually made this announcement formally. But we're releasing this app now. And if you would like it, all you need to do, if you want to write that down, you could just go there. Who has a smartphone in here? If you have a smartphone, then you can use this. If you have an Android device or if you have iOS, you can use this. And we've set up a special code just for you to be able to use it. And you need to basically sign in today. If you sign in today, you can get it. So you need to sign in before 6 o'clock tonight. If you don't want to, no problem. But if you do, this is what you'll get. So right away, it'll ask you what your top three values are. It'll play this name that tune kind of game with you. And I'm not going to get into details. I'll just let you try it and see what you think. So we want to find out what you value out of 15 core values. Here are the values that we use. You can look at these yourself right now and just ask yourself, what are my top three values? I'll let you think about it for like half a minute. All right. So I want you to think back to these values a little bit. And ask yourself, what kind of values do I have? And you might have other values as well, like security, security is on there. You might have other values like my reputation. You might have other values such, oh, that's in there too. So there are all sorts of values in here, aren't there? Think about it. Am I more interested in my reputation or am I interested in my community? I'm not saying reputation is a bad thing, but it's a very different kind of value. Security? Yeah, that's an important thing. But it's a very different kind of value than community or kindness. So what kind of values are important? There's a big study done at the University of Michigan where they took 92 college students and they said this to them. You weren't picked. Now, these 92 college students were all participating in a study where they filled out an information sheet. And they gave the information sheet, they handed the information sheet to the researchers. And the researcher said, we'll take your information sheet and send it back to these student groups who are going to review everybody's information sheet. And we're sure you'll be picked by one of the groups to participate in an exercise. And then the researcher came back to the person and said, sorry, you weren't picked by any of the groups. There are a lot of groups, but no, you weren't picked, sorry. Doesn't that make you sad? Because we all have not been picked before, right? And when we're not picked, there are studies now for the last 15 years that have clearly shown that you eat more then. Oh my God, I wasn't picked. Or you smoke more if you're a smoker, or you drink more if you're a drinker. All of those things you engage in more if you have that problem. So they did that on purpose. By the way, there were no groups. They were not picked. They just, because psychologists are liars, and they just lied to these poor students to make them feel bad, to threaten what we call the ego. So they threatened their ego. And when they told them that, they expected them fully to have bigger problems with behavioral issues, with self-control, with willpower. And then they divided the students into three different groups. In one group, they said, just write down your daily routine. Imagine doing that if we asked you right now. I'm not going to, but just write down your daily typical routine. You can do that in about a minute, right? Next one, they said, write down what Aristotle called your hedonic values, things related to power, wealth. Now, by the way, Aristotle really understood this because he was the mentor to, anyone know? Aristotle, mentor to Alexander the Great. Imagine being Alexander the Great's mentor. Alexander, when he's about 15, goes, Aristotle, I'm thinking about invading India. What do you think? And that's the sort of conversations they would have. He certainly knew all about power as well as any modern scientist does. So Aristotle wrote a lot about this. What happens when you have these hedonic values, core values, like I want to be super attractive, I have Paris Hilton values, prestige, whatever, all of those things, let's call them Charlie Sheen values. I don't know whether they really are. I don't know Charlie Sheen. And then the other group is what Aristotle called eudaimonic people, eudaimonic values. Eudaimonic values are things like kindness, community, empathy, love, support. Ryan talked about love this morning. I can't wait to hear more about love today, because that is an eudaimonic value. Now, what does eudaimonic mean? What Aristotle talked about is that there is this inner daemon inside of us. And in fact, ancient Greek sculptors would literally create these terracotta sculptures. And on the terracotta sculpture, if you broke it, inside was this beautiful gold figurine, and they called the gold figurine the daemon. It's your inner self, it's your true self. Thomas Merton, the Catholic theologian, said we all have a true self. Hindu philosophers call this the Atman, this little piece inside that's our true self. We're born with this, they said. So finding this inner true self, your inner purpose, is important. So they asked a third of these students who had their egos threatened, right, to write down how they felt eudaimonically well and what their eudaimonic values were. And by the way, none of the groups had any problem whatsoever writing about each of these three things. The students had no problems writing about hedonic values. And that makes sense because Aristotle actually said we all have all of those things in us. We have hedonism in us and we have eudaimonism in us. We have both of those. We have our true self and these higher goals and values, and we have these more hedonic, hedonistic, pleasure-driven values. And he said, it's okay to have those. It's just that if that's all we have, Aristotle said, it's kind of like grazing cattle. It's not that good. So anyway, after they wrote these things down, they said, okay, well, we know you weren't picked before, but we have this other study. We'd love to have you participate. And almost all the students were kind of looking at their watches going, I have anything else to do other than have my ego crushed again. So I have to leave. And they go, oh, well, look, here's the deal. We have this bowl of chocolate chip cookies, and we need them taste tested. And then suddenly, all 92 of the 92 college students said, oh, okay, where do I sign the consent form? They all did. So they all signed a consent form. Yeah, no problem. And then, as the researcher was leaving, the researcher told that student, have as many as you like. Now, what's the experiment? They're trying to study how many cookies they ate, right? They're trying to look at willpower. And that's sure enough, because they were then given a form, they said, just rate for every cookie you eat the taste, the aroma, the color, the texture of every cookie. And so they did, and then they measured how many cookies. Now, what do you think? You be the researcher here. What would you hypothesize? First, I think we would hypothesize that the people who had their ego threatened, that were in the control condition, just writing down their daily routine, would eat the most cookies. And then the question is, though, which kind of values influence cookie eating? Is there a difference at all between the kind of values you have, or is a value a value a value? Are some values more valuable than others? That make sense? This is like, isn't this the essential philosophical question of all of personkind, of humankind? It really is. Are all values equally valuable? Well, here's what they found. They found that all values were not equally valuable. First of all, the students who were in the control group ate 8 cookies. 8 at one sitting. I teach a class of roughly 200 undergraduate college students at the University of Michigan where this study was done. And these are mainly pre-med or pre-health professional students. And I say, you were in the top 5th percentile on average to get into the University of Michigan from your high school. You're in the top 5th percentile in your SAT or ACT scores to get in. You were the best and the brightest. You were the elite. And we just hurt your feelings and you eat 8 cookies. You have no willpower whatsoever. And they go, no, we don't. We don't have any willpower. That's amazing to me. You eat 8 cookies. Come on, U of M. So you write down your hedonic values, 5 cookies. You write down your eudaimonic, your transcending values, and you eat only 3 cookies. That's great. So that's a big deal. Let's go to another study, and this is by my colleague Adam Grant again from the University of Pennsylvania. He just wrote an amazing book last year called Give and Take. I'd so recommend this book, and he wrote a new book recently as well. Just an amazing thinker. But his wife was having a baby at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital, and he noticed that all these people in the room, or as they were entering the room, all these health professionals were not washing their hands. Now, who works in a healthcare facility? Anyone here? So you're well used to this concept. You better wash your hands, right? Everybody has to wash their hands. But nobody is washing their hands, and Adam Grant got pissed. So he said, you know, he kept asking, and of course they'd go, oh, geez, sorry about that. We'll wash our hands. And then he started, while his wife was in deep labor, came up with an experiment. He noticed. Oh, God. So he noticed that there are these dispensers of sanitizing gel. And he said, wow, there are dispensers of sanitizing gel in all the rooms. How about if we put a sign up above the dispenser of sanitizing gel and we change the signs, we randomize it. So in one group, we give this sign on the top of hand sanitizing gel, hand hygiene prevents you from catching diseases. The other sanitizing gel, randomly assigned, remember, these are just all over the place, all these different rooms. He put up this sign, hand hygiene prevents patients from catching diseases. You notice a one-word difference? One word. Then he followed the hand sanitizing gel for 2 weeks. He didn't follow the people because the people will lie. Do you wash your hands before you walk into a room? Oh, of course I do. Yes, you're a right liar. But he followed the hand sanitizing gel. And what he did was weigh it at the end. Is that awesome? He is such a smart guy. So he weighed it, and sure enough, here's what he found. Only 46% was left when you thought about other people. 66% was left when you're thinking about yourself. That's incredible. That's one word. One word created that difference. So I'm really interested in values. I'm interested in transcending values, and I'm super interested in purposeful self-transcending values. In this Juul app, if you decide to sign up for it today and take it, we'll ask you what your purpose is. And by the way, we will not share this with your identified data with anybody, just to let you know. So we follow the same kinds of rules and standards that everybody does for this, just to let you know. So we won't be showing anybody's purpose. But what we do want to do is take a look at the words you use. So here are the words that I use, to enjoy, love, and beauty. That's my personal purpose. And if I say, I don't know what my purpose in life is, I need help. Well, for one thing, we just stimulated your purposeful thinking by asking you to affirm your core values. We know that helps you. Second, we divided purpose into four different areas: your personal, your family, your work, and your community. All of those are important. But if you need more help, there are examples. You can say, oh, I want to get some other examples. And then from that, you go ahead and put in whatever your purpose is. You can dictate it if you want into your phone. It really works. So to be an engaged father, husband, etc. So then it automatically assembles your purpose. Once you put in those four domains, it just automatically assembles it. And by the way, roughly 90% or more of people are able to put this in. We have a lot of data on this. It is not hard to put this in. You can always change it if you want. And by purpose, this is what I'm referring to. A purpose, to me, is an overarching and self-transcending goal to which I deeply value. There are two really key words in that. Well, three. One is self-transcending. That this is not the hedonic values we're talking about. These are the eudaimonic, the transcending, the higher order values that are in touch with my inner daemon. Does that make sense? My true self. So values are important. We just talked about how affirming your core values gives you more self-control. It helps you change your behavior. The other part is setting goals. Goal setting is really important. If I ask everybody in here their breath as long as they could, I'm not going to, don't worry. Who could hold their breath for 3 minutes? Oh, come on. Nobody? 2 minutes. Who could hold their breath for 2 minutes? You're joking. Okay, fine. 1 minute. Hold them high. Good, okay. Now, if I ask you to, so let's say on average it's 45 seconds, all right? Do you think you could hold your breath for 45 seconds? All right, if you want, after this, during, you know, over a beer, if you buy me a beer, I'll teach you how to hold your breath for 3 minutes. I swear, I was doing a TED Talk one time, and David Blaine, who has held his breath for 17 minutes, taught me how to hold my breath for 4 minutes. It was cool. I'll teach you, but you have to buy me a beer. Anyway, a goal is important. If I just say, hold your breath as long as you can, you'll probably hold it on an average of 45 seconds. If I put a clock up here and say, I'd like you to hold your breath for a minute, and the clock starts ticking, you would hold your breath much more likely for a minute, wouldn't you? You remember, you're swimming underwater and you want to swim as far as you can. You see the other end, you're going, I can barely breathe, I'm going to die. But you want to touch the end wall, right? When you want to touch that, that's called a goal. Anyone use checklists here? Of course, most of you do. Isn't it wonderful when you've just scratched off that thing or checked the box? I literally create these nice little boxes because I'm a little OCD, and then, you know, and then I check them and go, oh my God, it's like a dopamine rush. It's amazing. And I really accomplish more when I have a check. Those are goals as well. With a goal like this, though, it's a bigger, higher order goal. That's what a purpose is. It's a goal that you deeply, deeply care about, that you value. That's all we're talking about. It doesn't mean you have to go to India for 6 months and meditate in a cave. It does not. What it means is that you have to think about what I care about the most in my life and then set a goal around it. Kind of operationalize that value. That makes sense? Now, here's what we find when we do that. When we ask these questions and a couple of others typically, usually 6 or 7 questions, about purpose in life, like I have a sense of direction or purpose in my life. Or some people wander aimlessly in their life. I am not one of them. And we put that all together in like a 1 to 6 scale. There are now over 100 studies that have done this and then followed these people for years. Now this is called a cohort study, by the way, in epidemiology. How do we discover whether smokers die earlier? Do we randomize little kids? Okay, Doodly, you're going to smoke, and Snoodly, you don't smoke. No, of course you don't. You can't do that. So you follow smokers, and you compare them against non-smokers, and you compare them against ex-smokers, and you follow them for a couple of decades, right? And you see who lives and who dies, who gets sick and who doesn't. That's what they do with purpose. They take a look and see, okay, how much purpose do you have? I have a lot of purpose, based on these questions I just asked. How about you? I have very little purpose. And then you follow people for years and see what happens. And here is what happens. If you have a strong purpose in life at baseline, at this initial time one, and then followed later, people live a lot longer. In fact, they live longer than if you have a strong purpose. It's like not smoking. It's like having a good diet. It's like working out all the time. Having a purpose is the strongest health behavior that I know of. People with a strong purpose are far less likely to develop stroke. They're far less likely to get heart attacks if they have heart disease. If they have a strong purpose in life, they're far better able to manage their diabetes. If they have a strong purpose, this is a study I did with Eric Kim, who is my doctoral student now at Harvard University, and Shelley Hirschner, who's one of the directors of our sleep center at the University of Michigan. People with a strong purpose in life followed over time end up with fewer sleep disturbances. By the way, all of these studies, just like in smoking, you might say, well, smokers, they're different. They have lower SES. They may have other poor health behaviors. So you want to statistically control for those things. And that's exactly what we do with purpose. So we control for age, education, income, gender, race, health behaviors, and health status. Now, you may say, oh, well, purpose in life is just for people who have everything else. Not true, it turns out. People with a lower SES in many studies actually have higher purpose. Isn't that amazing? In my book, I talk about, in fact, write a whole chapter about these three amazing heroes in Africa, who, one of whom, I'll just share one experience, was as a child, when he was 12 years old, was hit by a car walking to school in Uganda, and he became a quadriplegic. And so, stuck in a wheelchair, and as he pointed out, Uganda is not that sympathetic to quadriplegics, people in wheelchairs. But he ended up getting his law degree and then came back to Uganda, and now he runs services for people who are disabled in Uganda. His parents had died like within 2 years after he was hit as well of HIV. All of these people I write about in my book have gone through incredibly difficult lives. They all have amazingly strong purposes. And in fact, from their adversity, they grew. They didn't get worse. They actually grew. So people with a strong purpose who have come back from the Gulf Wars, people with purpose who have gone through hurricanes, people with purpose who have gone through earthquakes, or who have gone through the loss of a loved one or major illnesses, if you have purpose or can redefine a new purpose for yourself, those people are more likely to experience what we call post-traumatic growth than post-traumatic stress. Many of them start with post-traumatic stress and they end up getting post-traumatic growth. Does that make sense? So that's why purpose is so important. People with a purpose who go into inpatient treatment for alcohol or drug abuse are half as likely 6 months later to relapse. People with a strong purpose have better sex. Can we go home now? I mean, this is it. I don't think we need to talk anymore. This is unbelievable. I mean, imagine a drug that said, okay, we can reduce your heart attack rate, your stroke rate, you can manage your diabetes better, you're gonna relapse less, you'll live longer. Oh, and what are the side effects? You know, by the way, if that were a pill, that would be a multi-billion dollar pill, wouldn't it? Multi-billion dollar pill. And usually, if it were a real pill, the side effects would be 3 pages long. But what are the side effects? Oh, better sex and more friends. Oh, that sucks. So here's an amazing study. People with a strong purpose who are seniors. Anyone have parents who are in senior centers? My parents are in senior center. And my dad, when he retired, really just lost it. I mean, because he had such a strong purpose. And then, you know, suddenly he had no purpose. And he thought, oh, I'll just golf. And then after 5 days, he realized he sucked at golf. And he didn't like golf. And then he started watching golf on TV all the time. And then he started watching golf on TV when they weren't really golfing. So he'd watch the Golf Channel. And then he'd watch the Golf Channel all the time and just eat. And he got fatter and fatter and less happy. And it really, he had to repurpose his life in order to change that. But we know a lot of seniors who do that. And it turns out if they go into senior centers or are in senior centers and have low purpose, 7 years later, again, after statistically controlling for age, race, gender, income, education, health status, and health behaviors, people with a strong purpose in life at baseline followed 7 years later are 2.4 times less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. 2.4 times. I called Patricia Boyle, who runs this study. She's one of the world's experts on this. And I said, what is the deal? I can't believe that this is found. She said, we couldn't believe it either. So we opened their heads and looked at their brains in autopsy. And sure enough, people with low purpose had all sorts of problems in their brains. So physiologically, they literally saw differences in their brains if they had low purpose in life versus high purpose in life. So finally, the last study I'll show is a study that I did again with my colleague Eric Kim and Carol Riff from the University of Wisconsin, who's one of the world's experts on purpose in life. And we followed people for 7 years. I'm sorry, 6 years. We followed over 7,000 people for 6 years, looking at people with different levels of purpose in their life. And we found for each unit of increase in purpose, we saw an associated 17% fewer nights spent in the hospital. Now, let me put that in perspective. Remember our six-item scale? That's what was used. And for every point that you added, we saw, 6 years later, a 17% reduction in hospital nights. If you had a drug that did that, again, that's a billion-dollar drug. If you discovered this, you'd get the Nobel Prize. Why don't we get the Nobel Prize for this? Well, because it's something that's kind of amorphous, right? So what if we could take purpose and kind of put it in your pocket? That's what we're trying to do. So purpose is very clearly very good for you. It strengthens resilience. It reduces defensiveness to change. So kind of to close this up a little bit, again, I want to redefine health. Ryan is redefining health as well. We can redefine it by looking at your body as a boat, that you want a strong boat, but you also want wind in your sails. You want vitality. You also want a strong rudder. You want self-control in your life. Those two things are quite different. But organized together, they allow you to live a more purposeful life. And we know that space, sleep, presence, activity, creativity, and eating well can give you more alignment with your purpose through having more energy and willpower. And we know that the environment is a big issue as well. Again, my purpose is big. It's lofty. I will never probably reach in my lifetime 1 billion people. I know that. But why not make your own purpose? As you're thinking about your purpose, why not make it big? Who cares if you die before that happens? It gives you a bigger life. It gives you a more fulfilled life and, quite honestly, a more fun life. So that's one thing we're going to encourage you to do today. Whether you use our app, and you can use our app and get on, and it will facilitate this purpose. If you decide not to use the app, that's fine. You can write down your purpose. But I'd love to see these purposes people have. My new purpose, as of the last 9 months, is my granddaughter, little Madeline Julia. She is driving me totally. This is why I work out. This is why I sleep better. This is why I'm trying to be more creative, because I want to be the most awesome grandfather ever, because this is a very special person in my life. I'd like to close out with this 4-minute video. And this is done by a pretty special person. His name is Sekou Andrews. He is a 2-time national spoken word champion in the United States. He has spoken for President Obama, for Oprah Winfrey, for many, many other groups. And I got to know him at a TED Talk a couple years ago, and I gave him this app. We gave him this app and said, Sekou, why don't you check this app out? And he ended up in an airplane flight from Los Angeles to Detroit in a 5-hour period of time writing this poem. So it's a 4-minute poem. I'd like to show it to you.
Aristotle often spoke of the idea that we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Power in that notion is that it pulls the philosophy from our minds and puts it in our muscles. And I would go a step further. If excellence is the destination and habits are the vehicle, then the engine that makes it drive is the unearthing of our why, purpose. And not the philosophy of purpose, like some theory learned in school with no idea how it shows up in our lives. No, the science of sustainable excellence is found in purpose applied. For it's how we live the theory that gives purpose its feet. Putting purpose into practice puts the quantum in my leap. Making sure the reasons behind the life well lived are served is what can turn my wellness from a noun into a verb. Because health means well, and wellness is certainly well-meaning, but only purpose has the means to get me to well-being. Like how sometimes my wife's kiss on my right cheek is all the sugar I need to remind me to cut the sweets that would cause diabetes. The energy that I exchange with the meaningful people who matter most is the chemistry that converts that meaning to matter, the accountability that makes all my excuses scatter, the value-driven choices that are based on my patterns. There are friends to whom I only listen because I know they know me. They know all my good and bad habits. They know my history. There are journals with my entries that I revisit and read just to learn which days I've grown out of, which days I repeat. There are weather forecasts that I call upon just to see what to wear to make today the best that it can be. These daily incremental gains fan the incremental flames, making incrememorable moments that help my behavior change. With this tool, designed on purpose to literally analyze yesterday's history, to decode tomorrow's mystery, and give today more victories. It is possibility in a pocket. It's purpose in a purse. It doesn't show me the finish line without showing the steps first. That first step that gets me off the couch to go run with the life I'm running toward, not the death I'm running from. It's less of a health risk assessment or a wellness checklist, and more like a data detective that aggregates biometrics and other patterns detected, like which days are most hectic and which triggers make you aggressive. Like, I noticed that Monday work pressures plus gas prices leave your mood affected. On the mortgage days, you're less rested and your energy is a mess. But every week that you invested time for hobbies, you were more present. And scheduling social events keep you from feeling disconnected. So here are some impressive community suggestions from health experts and others who perfected the selection of habits most effective and habits to be rejected, anchored by the core values you selected to leave your course corrected. But of course, before we get reckless and try to tackle your whole life objective, how about we put your excellence directive in a bit of perspective and start with just giving you the will today to eat a smart breakfast. Every healthy habit teaches me to give myself the space I need to serenade my holistic balance in four-part harmony, personal and community, work and home. This is what the word purpose looks like when it's owned. Less of a precious stone that gives your life bling and more of a jewel that beautifies your well-being, makes you shine bright like a forecast that sings of how you survived winter and gave your life spring by pressing finger to screen and literally tapping into the power of that friend who knows who you are, the journal that tracks where you've been, the forecast that shows where you're headed, the habits that lead to the win. See, it's not about what Aristotle said eons ago, but what Aristotle says today about your history that helps you habitually keep your purpose in play, gives the boat that is your body the needed navigation to sail through uncharted waters to your life's aspiration. And you can't sail into your sunset without the sun's navigation. So this is the light that guides journey to destination. This is the map and engine that drives your intrinsic motivation. This is the act of well-being, its daily activation. Purpose is the point that gives your life exclamation. And this is more than just the theory of purpose. This is the application.
Yeah. All I want to say is that this is not about just this application or about Jewel. This meeting isn't just about Welcoa, frankly, or about Ryan or myself or the other speakers. It really is about all of you, because what we're talking about is a huge change. And I'm not kidding. I've been in this field for 30 years. I have never seen such a quantum change very suddenly in how we're going to think about health, how we're going to define health, how we're going to move forward in this field and really reclaim this concept of well-being, as opposed to just avoiding disease and death. And it starts with all of you. And I hope all of you are raising your hand with me to say, I am part of this. I am part of not just this conference, but I am the beginning of a movement that we can start to try to change wellness to well-being and try to change the world. Thank you so much.